Lucy Stern's diary. 12 September. How good they all are to me. I quite love that dear Dr. Van Helsing. I wonder why he's so anxious about these flowers. He probably frightened. Seward's diary, 13 September. Called at the Berkeley and found Van Helsing. As usual, at the time, the carriage ordered from the hotel was waiting. Professor took his bag, which he always brings with him. Let all be put down exactly. Van Helsing and I arrived at Hillingdon at 8 o'clock. It was a lovely morning. The bright sunshine and all the fresh feeling of early autumn seemed like the completion of nature's annual work. The leaves were turning warmly and said, "You'll be glad to know that Lucy's better. The dear child is still asleep." I looked into a room and saw her, but did not go in lest I should disturb her. The professor smiled and looked quite jubilant. He rubbed his hands together and said, "Aha! Working." To which she replied, "You must not take all the credit to yourself, Doctor. Lucy's state this morning is due in part to me." "How do you mean that?" asked the professor. "Well, he's anxious about the dear child in the night and went into a room. She was sleeping soundly, so soundly that even my coming did not wake her. But the room was awfully stuffy. There were a lot of that such things must be in such a way. This partner, all unknown, and all for the best, as she think, that such things lead her daughter body and soul. And we must not tell her. We must not even warn her. Die, and both die. Oh. zoological gardens in which the Wolf Department is included. Thomas Builder lives in one of the cottages in the enclosure behind the Elephant House and was just sitting down to his tea when I found him. Thomas and his wife are hospitable folk, elderly, and without children. And if the specimen I enjoyed of their hospitality be of the average kind, their lives must be pretty comfortable. The keeper would not enter on what he called business until the supper was over and we were all satisfied. Then, when the table was cleared and he lit his pipe, he said, "Now, sir, you can go on and ask me what you want. You'll excuse me for refusing to talk of professional subjects afore meals. I give the wolves and the jackals and the hyenas and all that section their tea before I begins to ask them questions." "How do you mean, ask them questions?" I queried, wishful to get him into a talkative humor. "Hitting of them over the head with a pole is one way. Scratching of their ears is another. When gents is as flush wants a bit of shore for their gals, I don't so much mind the fuss. The end of the pole part before I chucks in their dinner, but I await till they've had their sherry and coffee, so to speak, before I tries on with the ear scratching. Mind you," he added philosophically, "there's a deal of the same nature in us as in them there animals. Here's you a comin' and asking of me questions about my business, and I that drunk like that only for your bloomin' 5 quid, I'd have seen you blow thrust before I'd answer. Now even when you arsk me sarcastic like, if I'd like you to arsk the superintendent if you might arsk me questions. Without offense, did I tell you to go to hell?" "You did. And when you said you'd report me for using obscene language that was hitting me over the head, but the 5 quid made that all right. I weren't going to fight, so I waited for the food and did with my oil as the wolves and lions and tigers does. But Lord love your heart, now that the old woman has stuck a chunk of her tea cake in me and rinsed me out with her bloomin' old teapot, and I've lit a hop, you may scratch my ears for all you're worth and won't even get a growl out of me. Drive along with your questions. I know what you're coming at. That here escaped wolf." "Exactly. I want you to give me your view of it. Just tell me how it happened. And when I know the facts, I'll get you to say what you consider was the cause of it and how you think the whole affair will end." "All right, Governor. This here's about the old story. That here wolf, what we call Bearsicker, was one of three gray ones that come from Norway. Shamrocks, which we bought off him 4 years ago. He's a nice, well-behaved wolf. They never gave no trouble to talk of. I'm more surprised at him for wanting to get out. Place, but there you can't trust wolves no more, nor women. Don't you mind him, sir, broke in Mrs. Tom with a cheery laugh. He's got mind of the enemies. So long, and blessed he ain't like an old wolf himself. But there ain't no harm in him. Well, sir, it was about 2 hours after feeding yesterday when I first heard my disturbance. I was making up a litter with the monkey house for a young puma which was ill. But when I heard the yelping and howling, I came some way straight. There was Bearsicker, tearing like a mad thing at the bars if he wanted to get out. There wasn't much people about that day, and close at hand was only one man, a tall, thin chap with a hooked nose and a pointed beard, with a few white hairs running through it. Seemed as if it was him that was irritating that. He had white kid gloves on his hands, and he pointed out to the animals to me and says, "Keeper, these wolves seem upset at something." "Maybe it's you," says I, for I did not like the airs as he gave himself. He didn't get angry, as I hoped he would, but he smiled a kind of insolent smile with a mouth full of white, sharp teeth. "Oh no, they wouldn't like me," he says. "Oh yes, they would," says I, imitating of them. "They always like a bone or two to clean their teeth on about tea time, which you was a bag full." Well, it was an odd thing, but when the animals sees us talking, they lay down. And when I went over to Bearsicker, he let me stroke his ears same as ever. That there man came over and blessed, but if he didn't put his hand and stroke the old wolf's ears too. "I care," says I. "Bearsicker is quick." "Never mind," he says, "I'm used to him." "Are you in the business yourself?" I says, taking off my hat. "For men with trades in wolves, and setter is a good friend to keepers." "No'm," says he, "not exactly in the business, but I've made pets of several." And with that, he lifts his hat, as polite as a lord, and walks away. Old Bearsicker kept looking after him till he was out of sight, and then went and lay down in the corner, and wouldn't come out the whole evening. Well, soon as the moon was up, the wolves here began all a howling. There weren't nothing for 'em to howl at. There weren't no one near, except someone that was evidently calling a dog somewheres out back of the gardenings in the park road. Once or twice I went out to see that all was all right, and it was. And then the howling stopped. Just before 12 o'clock, I just took a look round before I turned in, and bust me, but when I came opposite the old bear's cage, I see the rail broken and twisted about the cage and empty. And that's all I know for certain. Did anyone else see anything? One of our gardeners was coming home about that time from Harmony. When he sees a big gray dog coming out through the gardening hedges. At least so he says. I don't give much for it myself. For if he did, he never said a word about it to his missus when he got out. And it was only after the escape of the wolf that was made known. And we'd been up all night a-hunting in the park for bears occur. That he remembered seeing anything. Builder, can you account in any way for the escape of the wolf? Well, sir, he said with a suspicious sort of modesty, I think I can, but I don't know as how you'd be satisfied with the theory. Certainly I shall, if a man like you, who knows the animals from experience, can't hazard a good guess at any rate, who is even to try? Well then, sir, I account for it this way. It seems to me that Airwolf escaped simply because he wanted to get out. From the hearty way that both Thomas and his wife laughed at the joke, I could see that it had done some service before, and that the whole explanation was simply an elaborate sell. I couldn't cope in badinage with the worthy Thomas, but I thought I knew a sure way to his heart. So I said, now, Mr. Builder, we'll consider that first half sovereign worked off, and this brother of his is waiting to be claimed when you've told me what you think will happen. Right you are, sir, he said briskly. You'll excuse me, I know, for a chaffin' of ye, but the old woman here winked at me, which was as much as telling me to go on. Well, I never, said the old lady. My opinion is this. That there wolf is hiding him somewheres. The gardener what didn't remember said he was in galloping northward faster than a horse could go, but I don't believe him. For you see, sir, wolves don't gallop no more, no dogs does. They not world's just find things in a storybook. And I dare say when they get in packs and does beat Chibi in something that's more feared than they is, they can make a devil of a noise and chop it up, whatever it is. But, Lord bless you, in real life a wolf is only a low creature. Not half so clever, bold as a good dog, and not half a quarter so much fighting. This one ain't used to fighting, or even buying for herself. More like he's somewhere around the park a hiding than the shivering of. And if he thinks at all, wondering where he's to get his breakfast from. Or maybe he's got down some area and is in a coal cellar. My eye, won't some cook get a rum start when she sees his green eyes shining at her out of the dark. If he can't get food, he's bound to look for it. Mayhap he may chance to light on a butcher shop in time. If he doesn't, and some nursemaid goes out a walking or arf with a soldier, leaving the infant in the perambulator, well, then I shouldn't be surprised if the census is one baby the less. That's all. I was handing him the half-sovereign when something came bobbing up against the window. Mr. Dover's face doubled its natural length with surprise. God bless me, he said. If there ain't old Bearsicker come back by himself. He went to the door and opened it. Unnecessary proceeding, it seemed to me. I have always thought a wild animal never looks so well as when some obstacle of profound durability is between us. A personal experience has intensified rather than diminished that idea. After all, however, there is nothing like custom, for neither Dover nor his wife thought any more of the wolf than I should of the dog. The animal itself is a peaceful and well-behaved as that father of all picture wolves, Red Riding Hood's quondam friend, whilst moving her compliments in masquerade. The whole scene was an unutterable mixture of comedy and pathos. The wicked wolf, that for a half day had paralyzed London and set all the children in town shivering in their shoes, was there in a sort of penitent mood, and was received and petted like a sort of vulpine prodigal son. Old Dover examined him all over with the most tender solicitude, and when he had finished with his penitent, said, "There, I knew the poor old chap would get back into some kind of trouble. Didn't I say it all along? Here's his head all cut and full of broken glass. He's been a-gettin' over some bloomin' wall or other. It's a shine that people are allowed to top their walls with broken bottles. This here's what comes of it. Come along, Bearsicker." He took the wolf sent to Carfax, Sussex, as no county given, delivered late by 22 hours. 17 September, stop. Do not fail to be at Hillingham tonight, stop. If not watching all the time, frequently visit and see that flowers are as placed. Very important, do not fail, stop. Shall be with you as soon as possible after arrival, stop. Dr. Seward's diary, 18 September. Just off train from London. The arrival of Van Helsing's telegram filled me with dismay. A whole night lost, and I know For a second or two, she sat up, pointing at the wolf, and there was a strange and horrible gurgling in her throat. Then she fell over as if struck with lightning, and her head hit my forehead and made me dizzy for a moment or two. The room and all around seemed to spin. Fixed on the window, but the wolf drew his head back, and a whole myriad of little specks seems to come blowing in through the broken window, and wheeling and circling round like the pillar of dust that the travelers describe when there's a simoon in the desert. I tried to stir, but there was some spell upon me. Dear mother's poor body, which seemed to grow cold already, for her dear heart had ceased to beat, weighed me down, and I remembered no more for a while. The time did not seem long, but somewhere near, a passing bell was tolling. The dogs all round the neighborhood were howling, and in our shrubbery, seeming just outside, a nightingale was singing. I was dazed and stupid with pain and terror and weakness, but the sound of the nightingale seemed voice of my dead mother came back to comfort me. The sound seemed to have awakened the maids too, for I could hear their bare feet pattering outside my door. I called to them and they came in, and when they saw what had happened and what it was that lay over me in the bed, they screamed. The wind rushed in through the broken window and the door slammed to. They lifted off the body of my dear mother and laid her, covered up with a sheet, on the bed after they got up. They were all so frightened and nervous that I directed them to go to the dining room and each have a glass of wine. The door flew open for an instant and closed again. The maids shrieked and then went in a body to the dining room, and I laid what flowers I had on my dear mother's breast. When they were there, I remembered what Dr. Van Helsing had told me, but I didn't like to remove them. Besides, I would have some of the servants to sit up with me now. I was surprised that the maids did not come back. I called them, but got no answer. So I went to the dining room to look for them. My heart sank when I saw what happened. They all four helpless on the floor, breathing heavily. The decanter of sherry was on the table half full, but there was a queer, acrid smell about. I was suspicious and examined the decanter. It smelled of laudanum. And looking on the sideboard, I found that the bottle, which Mother's doctor uses for her. Oh, did you? floating.